When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Big freaking news. Big day. Big news. Important news. Breaking news. Let's just have Sean Fain, the president of the UAW. Just let's start right from the beginning, right with the president of the UAW, giving the good news on the developments of the day.
We have had a major breakthrough that has not only dramatically changed negotiations, but it's going to change the future of our union and the future of our industry. GM has now agreed in writing to place their electric battery manufacturing under our National Master Agreement. What this will mean for our membership cannot be understated. The plan was to draw down engine and transmission plants. We had a different plan, and our plan is winning at GM, and we expect it to win at Ford and Stellantis as well. GM did something that was unthinkable until just today. They agreed to put the future of this industry under our national agreement. This victory is a direct result of the power of our membership. It's your willingness to stand up when called. It's your commitment to winning what you are owed. The companies see it, the world sees it. Today we made GM say yes when they'd rather say no. Next up is Ford and Stellantis and three record contracts.
You know, good on them. And this, again, this is what going on strike. Sometimes you have to do it. This is what got them to this. But here's my problem in this. They could have done this without a strike. They could have done this without all the suffering and the pain and the chaos that's coming and that's happening. They could have done this because they were going to have to anyway. And why this is such an important, such a big deal is this transition. This technological shift that's going to happen, and it's going to happen regardless of you know what politics. It's going to happen. We're moving in that direction, but this could be the first time where we have one of these transitions where working people don't end up getting totally screwed. And the fact that they've won this, and hopefully the other two come along, and I think they will. I think they were going to have to. Because, you know, as people were telling me, like, this is the battle line. This is a non-starter. We're not going forward unless there is a future to be had. Sure, you can give us good raises now, but if there's no future, no point. Now, as I understood, and I've talked to a number of people today who said, look, you know, there's a lot of good stuff going on. The companies are moving. There's good negotiations happening, which is why you didn't see an expansion of the strike. In fact, you know, one of the threats was, you know, to shut down one of the really profitable GM plants in Arlington that make the Tahoe and that make the Suburban and, you know, the big stuff, the Yukon and the Yukon XL, the Escalade and the Escalade V. You know, you can't shut those down. Them's the money makers. But there are good things happening. You know, two of the three companies have agreed to, you know, to cost of living adjustments. They're moving on wages. They're moving on some benefit stuff. There's good stuff happening here. This is a positive movement after decades of stagnation and decline. And, you know, someone sent me this graph, and we've all seen the graph. Of, you know, from the end of World War II up until the mid to late 70s, how productivity and wages basically walked hand in hand. The more productive workers were, the more productive companies were, the higher wages were. In fact, the number they put out is, you know, productivity from 1947 to 1979 rose at about 119%. Wages, compensation, went up 100%. So as you did more, it was that meritocracy. The more work you do, the more you make. Well, 1979, you know, 1980, something weird happened in 1980. You know, maybe we'll remember something weird happening. You know, like a Republican president coming into office with a whole new economic vision of how to screw the working class. And from 1980 to 2009, productivity went up 80%. Wages, 8. Basically deadlined. That's not even keeping up with inflation. Where did that money go? Well, we know where it went. It went to, you know, enriching the wealth class. It went to making the rich richer, and it made the rest of us poorer. It's what they're calling the Great Regression. You know, we had this era of prosperity where unions were bargaining for better wages, hours, conditions. My grandparents' generation were on the picket lines fighting what we're seeing, the same fights today. So I have hope. I have hope that there's a better future for my kids and my grandkids. But today, the job numbers came up. And, you know, the line was, jobs report stunner, because they weren't expecting 336,000 jobs to be created. I think they were expecting something like 100 and 150, somewhere in that range. And here's the weird thing: no matter what the Fed does, no matter what the Republican Party does, no matter what the rich do to kill our economy, for some reason it's just steaming right along. But there was a story over at CNN that caught my attention. And it's another reason why I hate CNN and the corporate-controlled mainstream media. Understand, you know, 90% of our media is owned by 6 multinational corporations who don't want to pay higher taxes. So it's got to fit into the frame of, yeah, this is good news, but it's bad for you. The headline, here's why shockingly good jobs report is going to cost you. Here's the story. The U.S. economy feels lousy for so many people. So you'd think some really, really shocking good news, shockingly good news about the job market would give Americans' spirits a boost. Yeah, the job numbers are good. Why wouldn't it give us a boost? Oh, you're gonna rain on our parade, right? Oh, they say it won't, and here's why. Inflation. Got to remind us about inflation. Inflation is still biting. Prices can, and I love this line, this is my favorite line. Prices continue to rise faster than anyone would like. Is there an acceptable limit of things that we would like prices to go up? I've heard people complain about a penny when something goes up a penny. So, you know, prices are going up faster than we would like. Now, who raises prices? That's right, corporate America. Whose bottom lines are fatter than ever before? Yeah, that's right, corporate America. Whose CEOs are doing better than they've done almost ever? Oh, that's right, corporate America. But here's the thing. This job thing is bad because, you know, this inflation's happening. In fact, they point out that inflation's still above 3%. It's not the 9%. but reminding us it's still 3%. Now, they have to remind us that the Fed said, you know, what's ideal is 2%. So we're at 3. 3 is bad. Then they proceed to tell us that the wage growth is 4.2%. And I'm going, hold on. 4.2% wage growth, 3% inflation. Wages are pacing ahead of inflation. That's a good thing. That's what we want. Right? Yeah. That means we're making more money than what we're paying out. That means if we're debtors especially, that's going to help us get out of debt. But no, they don't want us to think like that. No. Because now they're going to remind us that, you know, mortgages are going to go up. They trot out Jamie Dimon. Jamie Dimon says 7% interest rates on mortgages. Credit cards are going to be in the 20% range. And I'm sitting here going, okay, the job numbers are good news. More people are working. Unemployment is, you know, just around 3.5%. That's a good thing. And again, you know, we've got the Fed who's trying to kill the golden goose, who's trying to slam on the brakes. You've got Republicans doing everything they can in Congress to cause a recession because it's literally the only way they're going to hold on to the House. So how can we continue to make good news bad? Oh, that's right. This telling us the economy's horrible. Even though more people are working, more people are getting jobs, wages are going up higher than inflation, we're turning a corner. We're going in a positive direction. But no, that's bad. They write, we should never cheer a bad job market, but a job market that has remained this healthy for this long really isn't excellent news for average Americans struggling to pay their bills. Except when you think that what the Fed wants is them to be unemployed. I mean, it's really quite remarkable when you listen to how they paint good news as bad, because we have to have the frame that, you know, the economy's terrible. We have to have the frame that the sky is falling. And of course, it's Joe Biden's fault. And I've heard this 1,000 times. It's all Joe Biden's fault. And why? Because he's talking about giving workers the right to organize, actually walking a picket line so workers can fight for better wages, hours, conditions, and a just transition, as we just talked about with the UAW. And also, he wants to tax the rich. you know, my favorite thing about the Sean Fain video is the T-shirt that he was wearing. And I love it, that said, eat the rich. At some point, we need to at least tax them. That's not on my palate, but we at least need to be taxing them. Because maybe this perverse incentive to have a news media that keeps telling us the economy, the sky is falling, the economy is dying, the recession is coming, all this bad news that they want us to believe, maybe it stops. And I know bad news sells, bad news. If it bleeds, it leads. I get that. But this is good news. Even if the CNN businesses of the world think the sky is falling. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Lots to get to today. Wow, lots to get to. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Vivek Ramaswamy. You know, as I've been saying this for a while, Republicans lie just a little bit differently now than they have in the past. For instance, Vivek was at a campaign stop in Iowa, and here's how it was portrayed by the campaign. Crazy people at a coffee shop were yelling slurs and swearing at poor Vivek. They were protesting and they were angry. And then the protesters, they got into their vehicle and they rammed into the campaign car and then sped off. There evidently was, people at this campaign stop. There were people getting coffee at the coffee shop. There was a woman who hit the car. But the police, say, no, what are you talking about? And look, it's one of those things where you go, the facts kind of matter, because Vivek is driven around in a Ford Expedition, probably one of the largest vehicles on the road. And the riotous woman, the protester, the evil swine, she viciously rammed his Expedition with a Honda Civic. And you go, wait a second, that math doesn't add up. Now, if you would have said, hey, he was driving the Honda Civic and, some crazy Karen got into an Expedition and hit him, you go, okay, I got that. That makes sense. But in that kind of a fight, giant, no, that's not. Oh, and did I mention he wasn't even in the car? So this is one of those things, they just lie a little differently. And the thing that gets me is, what we're seeing right now is the lying is ramping up and the rhetoric is getting a lot more desperate. They're ramping up the hate speech. They're ramping up the calls for violence. They're ramping up the division because they know they're in trouble. Republicans know they're in big trouble. They know that the clown show that's going on in the House is not good for them. They know that the 91 indictments of their presidential candidate is not good for them. They know that the more Trump gets into deep hot water, the more desperate, the more the cornered rat will attack. That's not good for them. So they're kind of, they're kind of setting the stage for what they hope possibly will come, which is violence and insurrection and all kinds of stuff down the road. And I look at this guy, this Greg Gutfeld, who I cannot stand. But he went on this bizarre rant about how elections don't work and society's in peril. And, it's because chaos, because election doesn't matter. And he rambles on this whole, certain people get criminal mulligans, saying that, those people get special treatment. But, those of us who on January 6th, broke into the Capitol and committed crimes, they don't give us a mulligan. No, you committed crimes. you did the crime. Do the time. But he goes out on all of these right wing, just these whiny complaints. And he comes to the meat and potatoes of it, saying that, we have to change our lives to accommodate the risks wherever we go. Because according to him, our cities are burning cesspools and there's crime everywhere and there's all kinds of stuff, even though I'm sure he lives in the city. We have to move out for the sake of the safety of our families and our own safety. Playing on that frame that all of the cities are burning. And they're not. But he goes on to say this, and this is the part that caught my attention. He said, we had a war over slavery. We knew, and I'm not sure who we is, because I don't think he and his ilk would have known that slavery was inhumane and immoral. But he said, we knew slavery was inhumane and immoral, but somehow we couldn't solve slavery peacefully. It was an evil, but one side refused to acknowledge it was evil because it was too big of an admission for them to make. Doesn't that feel that way now? That this defiant refusal to reverse this decline argues against the survival of a country. He asks, what does that leave you with? It leaves you with the need to make war to bring peace. If that is not Orwellian, I don't know what is. He goes on to say, because you have a side that cannot change. because then that means the admission that their beliefs have been corrupt all the time. And you go, yeah, you're pushing the big lie, which every court that your people appointed has said is a big lie. You continue to push conspiracy theory that there are no facts. You continue to push, you know, myth and idiocy. The cities are burning. They're all burning. No. You go to any major city in this country and yeah, you're going to find crime areas. And those are the places where the poverty is. But he goes on to say, so in a way, you have to force them to surrender. So he's basically calling for civil war. He's calling for violence in the streets. And, you know, someone says, whoa, we don't need a civil war. One of the other people on the show, no, we need elections. We need people to vote. And he loses his mind going, no, elections don't matter. Elections don't work. You know, he goes on this bizarre rant. We've got crime everywhere. We have no border. Every facet of society is in peril or in chaos. And as I'm watching this, I'm thinking about all of the people who I know consume this every day. And this is the exact rhetoric I get from them, because this is what they're feeding them. This is what the Fox viewer, this is what the right wing, what the Republican viewer is getting a heavy dose of daily. This kind of outrage candy, this kind of, you know, just, well, alternative facts. And it got me thinking that, you know, these folks want violence because they know they're in trouble. They know that if they continue doing what they're doing, the sleeping majority of this country, the people who don't always pay attention to politics, the people who live their lives and then a couple of weeks before the election start turning on the channels, they're going to start paying attention now. And that's not good for them, because the Republican Party's actually in chaos. So when you have Trump really escalating the rhetoric, especially on immigration, you know, saying, you know, they're poisoning the blood of our country, which, wow, let's go with that. Let's just go with plain wow. And this guy going, you know, election. Literally, election. He said elections don't work. If this isn't prepping us for, you know, we don't need elections. We can have a strong man come in. It'll be fine. We tried the democracy thing. It was cute for a couple of hundred years. We gave it the old college try. Time to move on. The adults have to take over, because you citizens, you unwashed masses. You just don't get it. You just don't get it. And this is one of those weird kind of moments where you go, when do we put these people in their place? You know, when does that sleeping majority wake up and say, this is too far. This is too crazy. This is way out of bounds. Let's get the last thought on this from Alice. We got Alice on line one. Give us your last thought, Alice.
They're all insane, Rick. They're all insane. I read an article about that too, and I thought, he's jumped the shark. He is definitely trying to incite people. But, you know, I guess they didn't learn their lesson the first time around. So I guess they want the Civil War 2.0. Have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Allison. Here's the thing. I've known the Red Hats for a very long time, even before they were Red Hats. They've been preparing for this for decades, wanting a reason. This is just giving a reason for what they've always wanted. Because they don't really believe in democracy. They don't really believe in the principles of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. They don't really believe in individual liberty. They talk about it, but they don't really believe in it for everyone. Theirs, yes, for them, but not for anyone else. And this is where the rest of us, the sane, rational majority, had better start paying attention, because they're saying the crazy stuff. They're saying the crazy stuff out loud and loud. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. It's going to get weird because they're getting desperate, and even more desperate by the day. Right back after this.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, on October 11th, on Wednesday the 11th, the Stop Trump Summit, America in Crisis, will be happening in New York and online. We'll be able to get things online. The New Republic is hosting one of the most exciting events of the season, the Stop Trump Summit. They'll examine the disasters of Trump's first term, the state of the legal cases against him, his own strange psychology and that of his MAGA followers, the messaging and polling on his 2024 campaign, everything concerned American citizens want to know about making sure he never takes office again. The day-long summit will gather the New Republic readers and enthusiastic New Yorkers and area supporters in a large-scale informal strategy session with some of the high-profile personalities, people like Michael Cohen, George Conway, Robert De Niro, Molly Jong-Fast, Don Lemon, Tara McGowan, Joel Payne, Jamie Raskin, Al Sharpton. The list goes on and on. Mary L. Trump, Randy Weingarten. It goes on and on and on. And one of the people who will most certainly be there is the guy who's put it all together. And that's why I've asked Michael Tomasky to come talk with us. He is the editor of The New Republic, TNR.com, the website. They are the folks putting on the Stop Trump Summit. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me, Rick. Really appreciate it.
So what's the point behind this? Obviously to stop Trump, but why now?
Well, we're approaching the 2024 campaign season. We've already been in it, I guess, but now we're starting to get into the thick of it. The first primary is only a few months away. And it's campaign time. By an old clock, this wasn't campaign time, but now it is. And it's time to start ringing the alarm bell and telling people, hey, you got to pay attention. You can't go to sleep on this. This election is not only the most important one that we've had in the United States for a while, but if the wrong guy wins, it actually could be the last one we have for a little while. So we want people to know that, and we want the New Republic to be very clearly on the side of ringing that bell and of telling people, wake up. We've really got to take this very seriously, and we've got to know the stakes in this election. And that's what this summit is about.
Yeah. Yesterday I used a quote from a Harvard professor of government, Daniel Ziblatt is his name. He said, if you want to know what it looks like when democracy is in trouble, this is what it looks like. And it should set off alarm bells that something's not right. And the fact that you've got a guy under 91 felony indictments most likely going to be the Republican nominee for president. I don't know. The fact that we've ousted a speaker, the fact that it doesn't seem like the Republican Party can do anything other than cause chaos. Something's not right. Democracy's in trouble.
Democracy's in big trouble. The Republican Party can't do anything but chaos. And we can see that, they're not going to replace Kevin McCarthy with a guy who's, a moderate who has relationships with Democrats. That's the farthest thing from their minds. They're going to replace Kevin McCarthy, who was already a pretty extreme rightist, with somebody who's even a more extreme rightist. So that's the Republican Party. And then there's Donald Trump himself. And the story that just broke today, Rick, that I know you saw, of him giving away these nuclear submarine secrets to an Australian citizen, to a citizen of another country. You just imagine if Hillary Clinton had done something like that. Just imagine if Barack Obama had done something like that. But it's just going to wash right off of him with his supporters. It's It's infuriating and it's vexing, but there is a segment of the American population that still is rational and that still can be spoken to and that will decide this election, and to whom we can say, this man is unacceptable. And we're aiming for that slice of the electorate. And that's who we're trying to talk to, as well as our base. We want to galvanize our base, of course. But we want to talk to those people who can be persuaded to say, no. We can't cross that bridge.
No, this is important. This is really important. It's important that you're doing this kind of, you know, broad-based educating and you know, putting things out for our media to report on, because they're certainly not going to go out and find this stuff on their own. They've got to be spoon-fed, evidently, or if they're going to pick up at all. The story that you talked about, we talked about yesterday on the program, and Fox News still has yet to mention the fact that this happened.
Yeah, of course they do. And they probably mentioned Hunter Biden 40,000 times in the meantime. And, you know, this, you mentioned Fox News. I mean, that media is really responsible for a lot of what's going on in this country these days. And, you know, I hate to give them credit for their power, but, you know, it's, you know, these jobs numbers come out this morning, Friday morning, 336,000 jobs, about double what was expected. A really good jobs report. How do you think that was reported on Fox? Do you think they said that was a good jobs report? I didn't watch Fox, so I don't know, but I can't imagine that it was. Nothing Joe Biden does could get any credit in that whole media ecosphere of the right wing. And it really colors how people think about things.
Yeah, but to be fair, CNN Business didn't paint it as good either. In fact, their headline was, here's how it's bad for you.
Yeah, well, that doesn't shock me. And, you know, CNN, you know, has its own set of problems. They had that Trump town hall at the behest of their, you know, executives. And we could talk a long time about that. I'm sure you have with your listeners. But yeah, I mean, it just proves the point that there's a right-wing media that does nothing but attack Biden, Democrats, liberalism, liberals all day, will never say anything good about any of those entities I just mentioned. And then there's a mainstream media, which is not right-wing, but is not as reflexively defensive of Biden and Democrats and liberals as the right-wing media is critical of them. So you have a real imbalance. So you take your average guy who lives in, a swing state. Let's say he lives in Appleton, Wisconsin. And, you know, he doesn't watch much cable news, but he has a coworker who watches a lot of Fox and another coworker who watches a lot of CNN. What gets through to that guy is mostly negative stuff about the Democrats.
Well, that's all it is. I mean, and you have this media culture that we have to present both sides, even if one side is lying. And one of the frames that we've been talking about here on the program for a while is, you know, this generation of Republicans lie just a little bit differently. In the old days, at least there was a kernel of truth to the lies. Now the lies seem to be, well, we're in the world of alternative facts and alternative realities. So they're just flat out lies at this point.
Well, this is a very important point. The lies are not just untruths. The lies are the opposite of the truth. The lies are the opposite of the truth. And that's a very important thing for people to wrap their heads around. And that's not just a typical politician's lie. That is a fascist lie, okay? When Joseph Goebbels in 1939 said that Poles were raping German women along the border, that was not just a lie. That was the opposite of the truth. And when Donald Trump says the things he says the opposite of the truth. Okay, so John Kelly came out this week and said to Jake Tapper of CNN that yes, Donald Trump did say that hideous thing at his own son's, John Kelly's son's, graveside in Arlington National Cemetery. I don't get it. What's in it for them? Donald Trump, when that story came out from Jeff Goldberg in The Atlantic in 2020, he didn't just deny it and say, I never said that. He said the opposite of the truth. He said at a rally in Pennsylvania, what kind of monster would say that? Okay, so he didn't just deny it. He turned it around and said the opposite of the truth. That's a fascist lie. So we've gone from just basic politician lies to fascist lies. And that is really dangerous and nefarious. And people believe fascist lies, history shows us. And it's really, I don't know what to do about it.
No, and this is where having a media culture that's hell-bent on, we have to tell both sides, even if one side is actually lying, that's a problem.
The media still doesn't know. You're exactly right. They still don't know how to figure this out and how to deal with it. I think they do understand. You know, they have learned since 2016 to say that such and such a claim Donald Trump makes isn't true. And that's good. That's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. But like, give you an example. You know, he was talking about the, in Philadelphia, you had some looting that went on. He goes and gives a speech and says, you know, we should just start shooting these people. And it was like, nobody bothered to mention that he's talking about executing people. You know, why not? Let's start shooting people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. People who haven't been arrested, haven't had a trial, you know, don't deserve the presumption of innocence that he himself is depending on right now in four different courtrooms. Yeah, it's just completely mind-boggling. And what's incredible, Rick, is that so many people just buy this. You know, I really couldn't believe the revelations from Kelly this week, because that's something that you would really think that conservatives would care about. You know, the reputation.
Yeah.
Of people who have served this country.
Yeah, but that's not new, Michael. That's not knew that story existed. And this is one of these things. I had a conversation with somebody this week, and I said, "Look, you know, we know this stuff already. It's just now being reconfirmed." And you know, the other part of this is, you know, we know this little bit. You know, we hear all of these horrible things. He's given away nuke secrets. He's got classified material in the bathroom. He's left it all over ballrooms. All of these horrible things that we know about. Imagine all the stuff we still don't know yet. Imagine how bad it could be, especially, you know, given his defense in the fraud trial, which was, I can't possibly overinflate my properties because I can always go to the Saudis and they'll pay it. If that's reality, what has he given them that's the reality?
Yeah, exactly. And what's he, you know, what's he doing with these secrets? What's he doing with these military secrets? Does he have them around just to be able to brag to his friends at Mar-a-Lago? That's probably the answer. But
that's my thought.
But, you know, but what if the occasion presented itself that he could make money from? You know, he always wants to make money from anything.
Yeah, he cannot be trusted. Let's get back to the summit, the Stop Trump Summit, America in Crisis. It's on Wednesday, October 11th in New York. For our listeners around the country that can't make it to New York, how do we participate?
Yeah, everybody can live stream it. We've had loads of people signing up for the live stream. TNR, the New Republic, TNR.com/events. And if you go to that site, the first thing you'll see is the Stop Trump Summit, and you click on that, and that will take you to a place where you can get tickets, and you click on get tickets, and you can buy tickets to attend the event or just to stream it. And to stream it is free. To attend, we're charging a little bit, but to stream it is free. But I really want to emphasize, Rick, I do hope that people in the New York area can come and see, you know, Mary Trump, can see Al Sharpton, can see all the people you mentioned earlier, Jamie Raskin, and, you know, all these panels on Stuart Stevens and George Conway and Michael Cohen and so many people who are going to be just delivering some truth about what we're up to here, what we're up against here, and what we can do. And we're really excited about this. I think it's a pretty big deal event, and I thank you for bringing me on to talk about it, and I really hope we can see as many people as we can there.
Now, I'm look, you, the right wing does all these kind of, you know, get togethers, CPAC and, you know, Turning Point USA and all these crazy summits. It's finally good to see someone going, hey, let's try and save democracy. Let's try and save the future of this country instead of powwows to destroy things. So I give you credit. I hope folks will attend TNR.com, the website. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. But Michael, I appreciate you sharing some time. I'd love to have you come back and give us the post summit and help us figure out how we actually do stop Trump from taking office once again.
Well, I'd love to come back and, you know, thank you for what you do, because, you know, we need to keep this fight going.
Good stuff. Thanks so much. Michael Tomasky, he is the editor over at the New Republic. Again, TNR.com, the website. Want to hear your thoughts? Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1993. That was the day that President Bill Clinton signed into law reforms to the Hatch Act. The Hatch Act was passed in 1939. It limited the political activity of federal employees. The act was passed due to accusations of alleged political cronyism by Democrats on New Deal projects. Half a century later, Congress loosened the restrictions. In his speech before signing the reform, President Clinton explained the changes, saying, quote, "The Federal Employees Political Activities Act, which I am about to sign, will permit federal employees and postal workers on their own time to manage campaigns, raise funds, and hold positions within political parties. Still, there will be some reasonable restrictions. They wouldn't be able to run for partisan political office themselves, for example." President Clinton described the importance of the changes, saying, quote, "We've been supporting democracy throughout the world, but here in our own country, millions of our own citizens have been denied one of the most basic democratic rights, the right to participate in the political process." He ended his remarks by saying, quote, "I look forward to the infusion and federal and postal employee energy, expertise, and dedication into our political system that this bill makes possible. Today, under the regulations of the Act, most employees can assist in voter registration drives, attend fundraisers, contribute money, and distribute campaign literature. They can even run for office in nonpartisan elections. They cannot, however, use their jobs to influence elections or engage in political activity while on the clock. Today, there remains a balancing act between protecting the free speech of federal employees and keeping the government politically neutral." Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So TNR.com, the website, if you want to take a look at the summit. And look, I highly suggest it. It's well worth at least getting the information, especially, you know, the heavy hitters that they've got who are going to come and speak and talk about what it's going to take for us to hold on to our democracy, because democracy is most certainly under assault. You know, here's the thing. The sad reality is you've got a lot of former Republicans, the anti-Trump Republicans, who are kind of just, you know, going, they're throwing in the towel, you know, going, yep, he's going to be the nominee. There's no stopping them, because the Republicans cannot seem to quit, can't seem to quit the cult, can't do it. I'll tell you. Well, we'll see where this goes. Let's go to the phones. We got Bob from Silicon Valley on line one. Bob, how are you today?
Pretty good. I had to go to the South Bay, San Jose Kaiser. They put me on blood thinners, so I have to go to the laboratory twice a week. And so I came to the South San Jose thing, and there were a couple hundred people on the sidewalk. And you should have heard all the honking. Amazing. And as I went inside, because they they really have to have my blood sample for this blood thinner thing.
Right.
It was pretty gloomy in there, pretty empty. They're largely shut down. They had a few things that they handle for emergencies, and this blood test that I have to have twice a week is one of those things that qualifies that. But I can tell you it was pretty gloomy inside, and outside the spirits were great, and all the honking and horns was amazing.
Yeah, you're talking about the fact that you've got 75,000 Kaiser Permanente workers who are on strike, went on strike for 3 days. They will be back very soon. So what do you think about what's going on?
Well, let's say today is the third day, and I say the spirits were really great. And I introduced myself to the people there, and because in a million years ago, I was a member of SEIU, and I was a shop steward, a chief steward, and a negotiating team member. And I let them know that, and I understand that, you know, the issues, it's not all money. It's also working conditions.
Yep.
And these people are the frontline people during COVID. They were working because they had to deal with people, but they were being stressed incredibly. And staffing is part of the issue.
Yep.
I guess if you really drill down, the price of housing is so high here that people have to commute from like an hour away or even more. And they haven't been able to fill some of the vacancies, so they were calling people from agencies to come in. Well, those people, these are like various people with licenses, you know, like licensed technicians and RNs and so on. There's a whole bunch of different specialties that all require licenses. So yeah, the people that come in from the agencies have the licenses, but they don't know if something goes on which extension number to call. You know, that kind of stuff, the detail stuff. So the people that are there that are the real workers are the ones that have to make all the decisions. And they're being burned out too. So I understand the issues, but I can tell you the spirit out there on the sidewalk of about 200 people was really amazing.
Yeah, I mean, these are people we told they were heroes. They were essential.
Oh, absolutely. And I am completely with. They are the heroes.
You know, and they internalize that.
I wanted to let you know that the spirits are good, and I think, with just my gut feeling, is Kaiser's waking up a little bit about overworking and short staffing.
No, and this is what I said, you know, the other day. I said, look, the reality is I don't know why Kaiser would push to this point when they're going to have to give in, or it's going to cost them a whole boatload of money, even more than they would spend by giving the union everything they wanted, because the union isn't asking for anything completely out of bounds. There's nothing outrageous in their requests.
That's precisely the impression I got, too, that they're being actually very reasonable, considering how they came through COVID with a lot of, I guess you could say, a lot of people at the front lines being exposed to people that were contagious as they came in.
Yeah.
So I give them a lot of credit for that, you know, and working through all that. So, yeah. It would be hard for me to do it.
No, good for you. Good for you to get out there and stand with those folks, Bob. Good stuff.
Oh well, Rick, as a member of that same union, although in another branch of it, as a shop steward, a chief steward, a negotiating team member, I could not stop there. I had to be there.
I hear
anyway,
you.
Thank you, Rick. I thought you'd appreciate.
I do.
A little
thank
bit
you.
Of good
appreciate
news.
It. No, and this is the thing that gets me. I looked at the demands. They're crazy. They aren't extreme. They're really reasonable. In fact, I would argue too reasonable. Now, I love the fact that Bob got out there and adopted a striker for the day. I love the fact that he got out there and walked with those folks and talked with them. I love that. And in fact, we all should be adopting a striker. We should all be getting out on these picket lines and understanding what it means to get out there and fight for something and win something. That's how we're going to move this economy in a better direction. That's how we're going to rebuild and revive the middle class by reunionizing. That's how we're going to reunite this country. I've been saying it for the longest time. That's the reality of where we are. And this is the thing that gets me. You know, you look at all of these strike scenarios. None of these unions have asked for anything that these companies cannot cannot pay. They haven't. What they've asked for are things the companies don't want to pay. Now, that's the difference. They don't want to share. They don't want to divvy the pie differently because they've had it so good for so long. You think about from the Reagan era till now, you have had labor under control. The firing of the Patco workers, the shot heard across the boardroom, meant that it was open season on workers. The fact that you could then go permanent, replace people in economic strikes, you could do all kinds of stuff. And you always had, a pro-corporate government that was willing to, or a pro-business government that was willing to go, screw those working people. This is why, again, I'm a big fan of what Joe Biden's doing. Because there's a chance here. There's an opportunity. We're in a moment right now where we can rebuild and revive that prosperous working class that our grandparents built. We can. By doing exactly what those UAW people are doing in Michigan and Ohio and Missouri, and doing what those workers in Oregon and California and all across the Midwest, doing what they're doing by walking the picket line, by saying, you know what? We're gonna put our hands in our pockets and we're gonna march our feet, because that's the only power that working people have, is to say, no, we're not gonna take it anymore. Enough is enough. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the hashtag 50 years of harm. 50 years the American Legislative Exchange Council has been doing their dirty work. Most of those years behind closed doors, without anybody knowing what's going on, without we the people knowing just how bad they have been and the kind of insanity that's been going on. It was only about, I guess, maybe what, about 12, 13 years ago that we started finding out just how bad they were with this model legislation that they were pushing through, the buying of our legislators across the country, whining and dining and feeding them and, well, probably much more and much worse. And here to share some thoughts on 50 years of harm and maybe how we make sure that they don't have 51. I've asked our truth slayer, our Alec exposer, Lisa Graves. She's the executive director of True North Research, their corporate watchdog group. You can check out their work at truenorthresearch.org. Lisa, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, Rick, it's a joy to be on your show. I'm such a fan of your work and your audience, hardworking Americans who care about our Constitution and want to make the American dream real. So an honor to be on your show.
So 50 years of harm. And as I said a minute ago, most of those 50 years in the back room, in the smoke-filled back room, doing their dirty dealings for corporate America at the expense of working people. How did they get exposed?
Well, a whistleblower came to me with all of the so-called model bills. And along with that model bill package, there was a piece of paper called ALEC 101. And it described how the private sector, meaning the corporations, and the public sector, meaning the legislators, got a, quote, equal voice and vote. And it turned out that, in fact, it was the case that ALEC was having these fancy meetings, as you pointed out, Rick, where lawmakers were schmoozed and boozed, wined and dined by these lobbyists. And then they were going behind closed doors without the press or public present and voting as equals on these bills to change our rights, limit our freedoms. And then those bills would get introduced in our state houses in Pennsylvania and across the country without any mention of the fact that they had already been pre-voted on by corporate lobbyists and special interest groups. And that some of these legislators were so willing to basically sell out their constituents that they were giving that special access to these ALEC funders. And so we launched ALEC Exposed in July of 2011 and helped push more than 100 corporations out of ALEC.
No, it's one of those things that I remember, going, it's amazing how this was happening and nobody knew it was happening right under our noses and how many people were involved. It was like one of those open conspiracy things that finally when someone said, hey, this is going on, it was like, oh my gosh, now this makes sense of how well coordinated. Now we see it, and now they're open and on it. They're open about it. Their dirty work, which gives us a chance to fight back. But the kind of money and power that they wield, scary stuff.
Well, that's right. And you know, I really want to do a hat tip to the National Education Association, one of the major teachers unions in the country, who back in the 1990s. Was trying to raise the alarm about what Alec was doing, targeting public schools, trying to privatize public schools. And then similarly, there was an effort by People for the American Way to do the same, to try to highlight what was happening with Alec. The trial lawyers tried to highlight it too. I think it was Defenders of Wildlife, you know, a couple of the green groups, but no press would cover it because they didn't have the bills. And so having that whistleblower, and I just want to say, Rick, that whistleblower was the result of the actual action of activists in this country who for the first time in 2011, after some Daily Coast bloggers started writing about Alec, there was a small protest at an Alec meeting in Cincinnati, the first time in like nearly 40 years that it had ever been protested. And as a result of that protest, someone with a conscience within Alec came out with those bills and shared them. And they came to me. Wow. I ended up with those bills and published them. And so that was directly due to writers, bloggers, people, a handful of people who showed up to protest Alec, really unmasked them. And that made all the difference. And then, of course, what was happening at the time is that Alec was pushing measures to make it harder for Americans to vote. But they also had pushed a really controversial bill that became very controversial in 2012, the so-called Stand Your Ground Law, which was pushed by the National Rifle Association, voted on at a secret meeting at a fancy resort in Texas with Walmart as the co-chair, the largest seller of long guns, meaning rifles, the biggest peddler of retailer of bullets in the world, voted for that Stand Your Ground Law along with other corporations back in 2005. And then it became law through Alec, pushed in a lot of states across the country. So that really woke people up to the dangers of this secret operation of Alec, this pay-to-play group.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is you talk to the average citizen, and they think the game is rigged. They think their government's rigged against them, and you go, here it is. This is who's rigged the game. This is who's behind a lot of that sentiment. And as you said, it was just a couple of years ago that someone came and said, here's this model legislation that we now know about, unemployment being one of them as well, that they went and attacked all across the country. We don't know all of the damage they've done over the 40 years that no one exposed them. Or do we? Do we have an idea of all the damage they've done in the past?
Well, we have taken a deep look, and along with allies like Common Cause, People for the American Way, Greenpeace, labor unions, almost across the board have done a lot of investigating, and we discovered some really shocking things. So for example, we learned that Alec was partnering with a white supremacist to attack giving DC voting rights in the 1970s. Then we learned that Alec was at the forefront of the fight against the anti-apartheid divestment movement. It played a key role behind the scenes, trying to back corporations from having to get out of racially segregated, the racist, really corrupt system of South Africa and Pretoria. We then learned that Alec had played a crucial role for many years in pushing lies about climate change. At one point, even claiming that if climate change is happening, it's good for you, even though, it's having a devastating effect on our planet. We're seeing it now in really substantial ways. But the other thing that was shocking, Rick, was that Alec was opposing any raise to the minimum wage for years and trying to preempt cities from raising their own minimum wage. And so, you have a situation where everyone knows, all of your listeners know, it's more expensive to live in a city than the country. That's nothing wrong with the city or the country. It's just the reality of housing costs. And so why shouldn't cities be able to have a higher minimum wage than a place where housing costs a little less? I think the minimum wage should be raised across the board. Doesn't matter where you live. But at a minimum, a city ought to be able to say, hey, housing costs are high, we should be able to raise our wage. But no, Alec was opposing that from the beginning. also tried to block paid sick leave in cities across the country through advancing the National Restaurant Association agenda. And just an array of things. But one of the things that was so shocking was Alec was pushing bills to bar limits on interest rates because, you know, the consumers, ordinary people, just want to pay the highest possible interest rate. You know, that's not something people want. They don't want that at all. We should have relief from those really incredible usury, that incredible predation by these credit card companies and loan sharks. But who's one of the biggest funders of Alec? The big banks, the big credit card companies, and the loan sharks. Yeah.
The payday lenders. Yeah. No, because they were part of that payday lending stuff, weren't they?
Yes. Yeah. A huge part of the payday lending, that like a longtime funder of theirs. And, you know, those people take advantage of working people who are just trying to make ends meet, you know, trying to deal with the cost of living. But Alec is on the side of corporations. They're on the side of the biggest companies in the country against the interests of the American people. And, you know, you see these legislators basically sell out the people who they were elected to represent in order to go off to some resort and be treated like a king or queen by these lobbyists, you know, go to these cigar parties where they literally hand out cigars on silver platters. You know, it's shocking. And in some ways it's shocking how cheaply some of these legislators in Pennsylvania and other places are willing to basically give up their votes and give you up in order to just get, like, you know, cheesecake on a stick and a cigar.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Lisa Graves. Lisa's the executive director of True North Research. They're a corporate watchdog group. You can check out their work at truenorthresearch.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Now, you were at the 50 Years of Harm Gala. I mean, the Alec Gala. Because I'm sure all the people who were at the big black tie event, they're proud of the work that they've done. They're proud of the destruction of unemployment and workers' comp and attacks on workers' rights through the whole no rights at work agenda. I'm sure they're proud of that, but we working people, we're the ones suffering the consequences. So what did we see at the big black tie event?
Well, you know, you're right. They certainly have had success in reducing rights at work. I mean, that's been a major agenda of Alex, to attack the rights of workers, to attack teachers, and more. But you wouldn't know how proud they were by how they scurried into the building as this effort, this action was taking place outside the National Portrait Gallery, very posh, lovely building in D.C. As people, you know, were standing there with the signs and the bullhorn, you know, calling out Alec, these Alec legislators and lobbyists in their tuxedos and fancy sequin gowns were, for the most part, rushing into the building, not willing to defend the record of Alec, just trying to hide from the American people, which is their modus operandi. Even though Alec, you know, since we started putting those bills online 12 years ago, and since we used through the Center for Media Democracy, which I'm now the board president of, but which I previously led, and other efforts, we started putting those bills up. Alec started putting some of its bills up online too, to try to keep people from going to our website where we explained how bad these bills were, how bad these model policies were. What we know is that it's not just the people that we've seen, like some of these corporations that are longstanding Alec funders, like Big Tobacco. We know now that one of the biggest new funders of Alec is Leonard Leo, the guy that people may know from packing the Supreme Court and trying to get the court to be stacked with judges to overturn our rights. And that includes labor rights, you know, which they did a few years ago, as well as Dobbs, the abortion case, signaling that they might even go after contraception, Americans wanting access to contraception, and also attacking environmental rights. So Leonard Leo, through a couple of his operations, is now one of the biggest funders of Alec too. We didn't see him go into the portrait gallery. We saw a bunch of other people very fancy attire go in, but boy, did they mostly go in fast. They didn't want to hear from the American people.
Yeah. What's interesting to me is, you know, they're going into the portrait gallery. That can't be cheap.
No. Yeah, we're going to figure out. We're going to get a FOIA in and find out how much that cost. One of the things that was a bit shocking about that event was we could see who the gala sponsors were. The Center for Media Democracy, David Armiak, who's the chief investigator over there at CMD, posted that on Twitter. But what we saw was that, you know, it was a number of these Leo tied groups. Of course, Charles Koch's operations were there. Charles Koch, one of the biggest billionaires in the world, an oil baron who's made a ton of money on oil futures and things like that. But also the Humane Society was there. That was a shock to see the Humane Society sponsoring Alec. One of the first bills I read when that whistleblower gave me those bills was a bill to block Americans from being able to effectively sue pet food companies, big, huge pet food conglomerates, for damages if their pets were killed due to, you know, a poorly formulated, you know, puppy chow or something. You know, but there was Humane Society. So, you know, I'm hoping Humane Society is going to take a second look at why they are underwriting this voter suppression right-wing organization with the money that people are sending in to actually try to protect pets.
Wow. It just gets crazier and crazier.
Yeah. You know, sometimes what happens is one of these right-wing lobbyists will just sign up and no one's minding the store at the top of the corporation. That's actually why some of those corporations dropped out of ALEC, because they didn't even know they were part of ALEC. That their right-wing the right-wing lobbyists had basically paid the dues, $10,000, $15,000 to be part of ALEC. And as soon as they learned more about ALEC, a lot of those corporations dumped ALEC, and rightly so.
Well, let's hope let's hope everyone dumps ALEC, because the 50 years of harm is far too much. Lisa, I appreciate you taking some time. Good on you for getting out there and having the voice heard. I hope folks will check out your website, truenorthresearch.org. You guys do incredible work. I hope you come back and keep us up to date on what's going on.
Will do, Rick. A joy to see you, and just a joy to be on your show. And hello and thank you to your amazing listeners. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Lisa Graves. She is the executive director there of True North Research. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So if you're wondering, you know, who's behind the Stand Your Ground laws, yeah, the NRA and ALEC. And it's one of those things that, again, the right has built an incredibly powerful messaging machine with talk radio and cable news and all of the moneyed educators and all of the bloviators that they've got, but also they spend massive amounts of money on lobbying, on creating alternative realities through their state policy network, all these think tanks, Heritage Foundation, all the way on down. The moneyed interests understand return on investment better than anyone. They know if they can create their own reality and they can spin their own reality, they can cite their own reality. Facts be damned. You can just make stuff up as long as you can cite your own research. Go and do your own research. Sitting on the can with your mouth open watching a YouTube video made by one of your other underlings. They've got their own little cesspool of insanity. And they've been doing it for decades. Generally under the radar, like ALEC, 50 years. And for almost 40 of them, nobody knew they were around. They laid low. And what do we got now? We've got craziness going on. you know, the saturation of more guns. I mean, they're really the purveyor of more sales because it's all about the sale. This is the problem with the country. Everything's about money. Everything's about the bottom line. Everything's about profit. Got to have more profit. The whole reason they keep pushing the, we've got to have the Second Amendment. Everyone's got to have, every home has to have an arsenal. Why? Because it means more money. It means more profit, more guns, more bullets, more disaster capitalism. So when an angry guy shows up to a governor's office with a handgun, which evidently happened this week, which isn't funny. I mean, but you know, this stuff happens more frequently now. Angry guy showed up with a loaded handgun to Governor Tony Evers' office at the state capitol in Wisconsin. It was arrested, taken away, made bail almost immediately. I don't know how you show up to a governor's office with a loaded gun, you know, shirtless. You know, he came back a couple hours later with a rifle instead, with an assault weapon, with an assault rifle. Really? Declared he wouldn't leave until he could talk to Evers about domestic abuse towards men. I don't know. I don't know. All I know is we're seeing more of this stuff. And the more heated rhetoric we're seeing, the more this stuff is going to continue. One of the things that's frightening to me is Trump is seeing himself being cornered. Because if you've noticed lately, his rhetoric has gotten a lot more angry, a lot more desperate. And look, there are the faithful out there. There are his flock who have been sold on this. It's hopeless. I talk to people every day who truly believe what Greg Gutfeld was talking about, that our schools are filled with, you know, cat litter boxes, that the teachers are indoctrinating our children, that they're forcing kids to transition. I mean, just craziness that, you know, every city in the country is, you know, on fire and there's crime and you walk into a city, you get mugged. That's what they believe. That everything is horrible, except, you know, here's fine. And this is the weird disconnect, because I've had these conversations where people go, you know, everything's terrible. You know, everything's bad. Everything, the country's in peril. And you go, well, how are things for you right now? Well, I'm okay. Well, I thought everything was in peril. I thought everything was terrible. Well, out there, out where? Show me what you mean. Oh, what you see on Fox News. Oh, you mean there's crime in cities? Yeah, there's crime in cities. There's always been crime in cities. In places where you have high poverty rates, where you have desperation, you're going to have crime. When I was a kid growing up in the 70s, I lived in a high poverty, high crime area. Saw lots of crime when I was a kid. Saw lots of man's inhumanity to man. I'm curious, you know, why that wasn't Joe Biden's fault back then. Oh, that's right. It's convenient now. If we solve poverty, if we solve some of those problems, maybe we solve the crime problem. Then there's the drug thing. We've always had drug problems. Why now? Oh, that's right. You got a Democrat in the White House. Immigration, same thing. Immigration is not Biden's fault. The fact that we have a Congress that can't come up with a solution, can't come with a path forward, is beyond me. Now, is it such a complicated situation that given the fact that we've got so many crazy people in Congress right now because we're not right now, could that be part of it? Could it be the solutions that we're given are impossible? Because what I'm told by my red hat friends is there are only two solutions. What they want is slam the door, build fences, build walls, electrify, shoot people coming across the border. There's that. And then there's, well, what evidently they believe Democrats want, which is swing the doors open. And I've yet to find It's not true. I did meet one person who said that we should swing the doors open. And they believed that the border should be like goods. We should be able to go back and forth. I don't believe in open borders. I think you do have to have sane immigration policies. I think you do have to have pathways. I think you do have to have the ability for people to come here who are refugees. But I also think we should be doing a whole lot more on helping people stay where they are and making their countries more livable. And I go back to 2010 when my Tea Party friends were all crazy about, we need to cut foreign aid. We need to slash and burn foreign aid. You know, the stuff that helped make places more tolerable. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Wednesday, October 11th, the Stop Trump Summit, America in Crisis, hosted by the New Republic. This is, they're saying, one of the most exciting events of the season. They're going to examine, well, the disaster of the Trump first term, the state of his legal cases, his own strange psychology, and that of his MAGA followers, the messaging and polling of the 2024 campaign, and everything concerned Americans should want to know and must know before making their decision in 2024 and making sure that he doesn't take office again. The day-long summit will gather the New Republic's readers and enthusiastic New Yorkers in the area to, well, come together for a large-scale informal strategy session with some high-powered, high-profile, high-focus folks. People like Michael Cohen, George Conway, Robert De Niro, Molly Jong Fast. You have Tara McGowan going to be there, Al Sharpton, whole bunch of people. Randy Weingarten's going to be there, all kinds of folks. If you can't get to New York, TNR.com. That's where you go on Wednesday. You can stream the whole event for free. I highly, highly suggest it. Let's go to the phones. We got Howard on line one from Santa Fe. Howard, how are you today?
Hey, Rick, I'm doing great, man. I really am. We've had a lovely day here. Balloon Fiesta started, I think, and the town's flush with tourism.
Nice. Love Santa Fe. What's on your mind?
Alec. They had a couple of their get-togethers within a couple of miles of where I lived 10 years ago. I really wanted to sneak on the property and see what the heck it was, but I didn't. Anyway, the most despicable thing about Alec, they come in with the bills written, and then they auction them off. I mean, you get it? The legislatures don't have to do any work at all.
Yep.
Except fold the money up and put it in their wallet.
Now, that's the beauty of it. Alec does their homework for them. They get to just go and smoke cigars and drink whiskey and you know, and play Beauty Queen.
Yeah. It's reverse legislation, in my opinion. Legislation for sale.
Yeah. No, it's scary.
Well,
stuff.
That's it. Sorry to be so somber on that, but that's a real reality of that.
No, I appreciate it, Howard. No, it's an excellent point. Thank you. And to Howard's point, look, you know, I remember when the unemployment thing was going on. You know, my legislature, who is now my congressman, Scott, pardon me, Perry, he used, I believe, one of the Alec model legislations to move forward because, oddly enough, there was an identical piece of legislation put forth by another legislator, another Republican ALEC member here in Pennsylvania to attack unemployment insurance, that the language was, well, you would get thrown out of school for plagiarism if you would have turned it in. And this is one of those things where ALEC at the time was pushing this across the country. In fact, if I remember correctly, there was a legislator in Florida who didn't even bother to take ALEC's name off of it and put their own on. They just put it right in with ALEC's name on it. What the heck? Be honest. And I gave them credit. At least they were honest that they weren't doing their work. They were just, you know, doing the bidding of someone who'd bought and paid for them. So yeah, there you go. But appreciate it, Howard. I wish you would have snuck onto the property and told me more. But I've known people who have gone to these events, and they're lavish events. You know, they wine and dine and schmooze and you know, line the pockets. It's literally, you're buying our legislators. Now that has tapped down since things have been exposed. But I got to tell you, I imagine, you know, go back into the 70s and the 80s and the 90s when nobody knew who they were, even the early 2000s when nobody knew who they were. You know, you can see how this is a conduit to major payouts. You can see how this is a conduit to the next job after your legislator gig. And again, this is, you know, I have people say they're for term limits. The reason I'm against term limits is Michigan. When Michigan passed their No Rights at Work bill, if you remember when Michigan went for right to work, it happened like thieves in the middle of the night. You had a bunch of you know, Democrats and Republicans. You had a bunch of people who would have never voted for it had they stand for election, vote for it because they needed a job going out the door. And who do you think the conduit for that could have been? Oh, I don't know. ALEC. You know, this is one of those things where, you know, you got friends. You got friends who can be helpful in times of need. Yeah, it's just amazing to me. I'm sure you all saw the story of Melania Trump has renegotiated her prenup. I didn't know you could renegotiate a prenup in the middle, but evidently this isn't the first time. Evidently she's done it a couple of times. But she wants to make sure that she's going to be left with plenty of money in the event that you know, all these legal things suck him dry. And, you know, good on her. I mean, she's smart. I mean, if you got to put up with being around him all day, yeah, okay. And I guess the leverage was they want her to be more involved in the campaign. They want her to be more visible because she's actually somewhat likable. I don't know about that, but you know, to the red hats, you know, she's the queen. So in that, she got the prenup, and this is one of those things where I'm going. The fact that her lawyers are saying, you know, we better lock some things in, is telling me she knows there's going to be nothing left. She knows that things are bad, things are desperate, and that he's probably not as rich as he says he is, which we've said all along, which is why, you know, again, I go back to the tax returns. I said, you know, look, you know, you have professionals who do those tax returns. They're generally not going to put themselves in peril, generally not. So there aren't going to be glaring crimes, I don't think. But they are going to say he's not as rich as he says he is, which is why he was, I believe he was hiding it. This is part of that as well, I think. Now, the reason that I think the prenup happened, or the renegotiation, is, well, there's going to be a whole lot of losing going on. Because today, the former top Trump Organization executive, Alan Weiselberg, evidently testified that, and you got to love this, he testified that he committed tax fraud because he was afraid he was going to get fired. Let that sink in for a minute. He has now openly said, look, yeah, I did it because, you know, I was afraid that he was going to fire me. You think about the tagline, the Trump tagline. And you've got Weaselberg, who's admitted now that, you know, under oath, he knew he was breaking the law, and he did it anyway. He overestimated the value of all of the things. Even though Trump's statement was, no, no, I can't possibly overvalue. Answer me this, because maybe I'm just fixated on this. Maybe this is just me. Maybe it's just my working class ethic. Because I don't believe that you get something for nothing. I don't believe there's such a thing as a free lunch. I believe that most things are transactional. I believe that most things are quid pro quo. So if Trump, truly, if this is actually accurate, and I believe it is, if he can go to the Saudis and go, look, I want $1 billion for this property. Or he can go to the Russians. He didn't bring up the Russians. But if you go down to Miami, if you go to Southern Florida, the Russians own most of Southern Florida. The Russian oligarchs bought up most of Southern Florida with mob money. Understand what it is. And the reason that the whole Russia thing happened, and it wasn't a hoax, the Mueller report was very clear. There were numerous points of coordination, of cooperation. You can call it whatever you want. There were numerous points where they were working hand in hand. How about that? And it had everything to do with mob money, oligarch money, and property transaction. And what does Donald do? Property transactions. So would I be surprised if, you know, there are Russian things in there? No, of course not. And I said that during the Mueller stuff. And now that, you know, Trump has brought up Saudi Arabia, would we be surprised that there's stuff there? Because let me ask you, if you own a house that's, let's say, $100,000, and I offer you $500,000 for it, what's your first question to me going to be? Well, my first question to me would be, how fast can I move? As long as I don't have to do anything for it. But my first question to you would be, what do I got to do for that? Because the house isn't worth $500,000. What do I have to do? And I think most rational people think the same way. What does Trump have to do to get his inflated price? What's he on the hook for? I got to tell you, it's angering to think that we have such a non-critical media structure that nobody, I've yet to read that anywhere. I've yet to read anyone asking that question, if that's really the defense. And maybe it's just me being suspicious. Maybe it's just me growing up as a poor kid in the projects who saw cons all the time, saw the street cons play out in front of me. But this guy has all the characteristics of a street con. We'll see. We'll see where this takes us. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, gonna wrap things up. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1996. 15,000 workers at the General Motors plant in Quebec walked off the job. Members of the Canadian Auto Workers Union were frustrated with their wages. They were also angry about layoffs and General Motors' move to outsource some of the auto production to non-unionized labor. One striker explained, GM doesn't want to have 30-year people anymore. They want temporary workers who they can pay lower wages. The Canadian Auto Workers had won an agreement with Chrysler that guaranteed the company would not sell off any Canadian parts plants. But GM refused to make a similar promise. During the strike, the union reported that General Motors' $39 billion profit last year was the largest single corporate profit ever recorded in Canadian history. The union argued that much of this profit came from underpaying Canadian workers. Canadians only accounted for 8% of the company's North American workforce, but they generated 42% of GM's total profit on the continent. Soon, GM workers at other Canadian plants joined the strike, which swelled to 26,000 workers. As the strike wore on, its impact was felt beyond the Canadian borders. Thousands of GM workers in the United States were temporarily laid off. The parts they built were not needed because of the strike in Canada. It is estimated that 90,000 cars were not produced because of the strike. Finally, after nearly 3 weeks, the union and the company reached an agreement. The workers won a 2% annual raise in addition to their cost of living increase, but they also agreed that GM could sell off two of its plants and allow GM the right to do more outsourcing of parts from outside suppliers. And for that, the workers at those plants were guaranteed their wage level for 3 years. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickssmithshow.com. Remember, TNR.com, The New Republic. They've got their Stop Trump Summit on Wednesday, October the 11th. Mark your calendar. You're not going to want to miss it. I highly suggest taking a look at it. And if you're not in the New York area and you can attend, you know, it's online. It's free. And I highly suggest paying attention to that because we need to organize. So today, interesting, I woke up to Kevin McCarthy is out. He's resigning. You're not going to have Kevin McCarthy, you know, to kick around anymore, you know, because that's it. He's considering, you know, resigning from the House at the end of his term. That's it. Done. And then, well, he said, maybe he's not going to resign. He's going to serve to the end of next year. And you know, he's going to run for re-election. And then he said, well, I never considered resigning. And I go, wait a second. How did we go full circle here? Oh, that's right. This is the news trap. Just like, and I love this one too. There's going to be a speaker's debate, as if reality Congress hasn't gotten crazy enough already. We're going to have a speaker debate. We're going to have 20 people on the stage debating to be speaker, of which nobody has the ability to vote other than the people in Congress. But we're going to put it on Fox News. And Bret Baier was going to be the host. It was going to be a closed debate and discussion. And it was going to be Monday night. We knew it was going to be Monday night. And then it was like, well, maybe not. And then it's off. And then I was waiting for him to say, no, we were never really, really considering it. And they're going, what? Again, you need to create buzz and news. And again, I'm waiting for them to blame someone. You know, there was a televised debate and so-and-so ruined it. And look, I don't know who the Republicans are going to make their speaker. I don't know if they can come to an agreement on who the speaker is going to be. I know Steve Scalise has blood cancer. His doctor gave him the A-OK because evidently the cancer treatment's going good, and good for him. I hope he does well. But he said today he's not looking to punish anyone, which he's trying to get the 8 people not to oust him if he does get it. If he does get it, he says we don't have the luxury of a big majority. No, you don't. And in you know, several months, you're not going to have the majority at all. Now, what I find hysterical is I could have told you that Donald Trump was going to back Jim Jordan, because Jim Jordan is the craziest of the candidates. So, of course, you would pick Butthead. Is it Beavis or Butthead? One of them. Of course you would choose him. What I found hysterical is before Trump had an opportunity to present his endorsement, to do the whole build up, to do the whole, spiel, a guy I have never heard of, Representative Troy Neals from Texas, evidently announced it beforehand. Kind of preempted the announcement, which I think is hysterical. Trump's people were not happy. In fact, one of his aides said, Neals just totally effed this up. Very unhappy. Very unhappy. But the show will continue. I'm optimistic that they will not come to a speaker anytime in the very near future. I look at someone like Gates, who they're eventually going to go after, and Cawthorn. They're going to get him out, which is a good thing. The more of those people we can get rid of, the better. But here's the thing. If you get rid of Gates, you might get someone worse. Now, that's always the risk. Generally, the devil is the one you try and stick with. But he's out on the fringe. What I found interesting is on an online fundraiser, Gates went after the impeachment effort, said it's unserious. Now, again, this is one of these guys. He's on the Kook Caucus. He should be all on board in the impeachment. So when someone like Gates is saying it's an unserious impeachment, you kind of got to wonder, what are the Republicans doing? I know what they're doing. They're dumping in the bed. And what is it about Republicans and feces? I mean, you go back to January 6th. You go back to January 6th. And, I got to tell you, I've been to protests. I've been to rallies. I've been to things. It never crossed my mind that, hey, I occupied the Wisconsin Capitol. I've occupied the Pennsylvania Capitol. I've done these things myself. Never once did I ever think it was a good idea to go, this would be a good place to drop trow and leave a present. I never thought that. I never thought that was a good idea. I never thought of leaving it on the floor, smearing it on the walls. Never once. It never crossed my mind. And I think any decent person, any rational, sane, decent human being, that doesn't cross their mind. There's a place for that. They actually have a room for it. Has a special seat for it. If you're out in the woods, there's a tree that you can hide behind, do that. There's all that stuff. But never in a building that other people occupy. So I don't know what it is about Republicans and feces. I'm not quite sure, but a Republican candidate for state assembly in New Jersey, evidently, according to the New Jersey Globe, pled guilty to smearing fecal matter on the doors of a children's daycare center. Yep. Joseph Vizzo. Joseph says it was done before anyone got hurt. I don't know what that means. He said, I'm not going to defend it. It was wrong. I was a young man. It was a horrible time. And I made a mistake. Obama came into office the year before. Huh. That's an interesting defense. It's an interesting defense. So, can someone break that down? How young were you? Was he one of the children in the daycare center? Because that I would understand. Because sometimes children in daycare centers do that. Why would you do that in a daycare center? Because he was an adult at the time, clearly. Why would you do? Oh, he's having a dispute with a neighbor who owned the daycare center. That's why you're going to subject other people's children to your... Yeah. Doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? But then again, look, you know, these are folks who don't make an awful lot of sense. And this guy wants to run for office. You remember the good old days when something like this would permanently bar you from even considering running for office? Maybe we should consider returning to those days. Maybe we should consider, you know, returning to a day where, I don't know, if you're smearing fecal matter on a daycare center door because you're mad at your neighbor, maybe you shouldn't be around other people, let alone leading other people and making policy that other people would have to abide by. Maybe just kind of a thought. I'm just spitballing here. And this is my problem again with the Republican Party as a whole. These aren't serious legislators. These are people who won popularity contests. These are people who are, hey, look at me. I want to get my next gig on Fox News. I want to get, you know, they see this as a stepping stone to some bit of fame and prosperity instead of going and doing the work of the American people. Because look, what have they done? What have they gotten done? And I point to Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats when they had control the last time around with a slimmer margin. And you know what? They got stuff done. They functioned. So this idea that they're going to throw out at us that government's broken. We need a civil war. Elections don't work. Government's broken. We need a dictator. No. Republicans are broken. Maybe we need to get rid of them. Government works just fine when people who believe in it, when people who understand how it works, when people who want it to work are the ones who are in charge of it. Maybe something we should think about before the next election. Maybe something we should internalize. Maybe a little something for our red hats. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you've got a question, comment, something on your mind. If you miss any portion of the program, podcast, wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Appreciate you taking time for us. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.